Hello, I am Matthew Caruana Galizia, and I would like to introduce you to the second series of It's Debatable, a weekly discussion of current affairs. This was first featured in 2004 by the Department of International Relations in the Faculty of Arts at the University of Malta, as part of course assessment for research methods. Today's program will be a discussion of North Korea's role as a potential nuclear power. The introductory session will be dealt with by Dr. Isabel Calle and Dr. Carmen Sammut. Today's participatory students are Sasha and Anastasia from Russia and Kurt from Malta. We will also have a short intervention by Kyoko from Japan. Dr. Calle will give a short introduction to the topic.
Thank you, Matthew. Well, following World War II, Korea was split, with the North coming under communist domination and ruled by Kim Il-sung until his death in 1994. His son, Kim Jong II, took over the state apparatus in 1994 and continued repressive rule, denying most basic rights. Some 1 million, other sources say up to 3 million, North Koreans died in the mid-1990s due to food shortages resulting from government mismanagement and national disasters. The regime on the global circuit is relatively isolated and draws most of its support from China and South Korea, who under its sunshine policy initiated in 2000 provided the North with resources in an endeavour to further its aims of eventual unification. In 1994, North Korea signed a deal with the Clinton administration, under which the country was offered enticements to give up its production of uranium and abandon pretensions of nuclear power. However, in 1998, the country test-fired a missile over northern Japan and into the Pacific. In 2002, North Korean Scud missiles were found aboard a ship bound for Yemen. In February 2003, the United Nations International Atomic Agency found it in breach of nuclear safeguards and reported it to the Security Council. North Korea responded by expelling IAEA inspectors, withdrawing from the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, announcing nuclear bomb capacity, and again firing numerous missiles from the Sea of Japan, the most recent attempt being that of July 2006, when it launched a Taepong-2 missile. Many of these attempts to fire missiles have been weakly executed. Nevertheless, the U.S. position to these events has hardened from wanting a freeze to seeking verifiable dismantlement of North Korean nuclear capacity. North Korea has responded by demanding security guarantees and development assistance, while the U.S. has sought for a multi-party regional security solution. In August 2003, six-party talks began, hosted by China and including South Korea, Japan and Russia. The talks have been stalled and restarted on numerous occasions, with the most recent announcement of recommencement in December 2006. In the meantime, North Korea has made numerous empty promises to halt its nuclear ambitions, the most recent illustration of this being its declaration on 9 October 2006 that it had carried out its first ever test of nuclear weapons. This led to the UN Security Council on October 14th unanimously voting to impose weapons and financial sanctions on North Korea, Resolution 1718. North Korean nuclear capability remains in doubt, and many of its statements are regarded as an empty boast by a blustering and weak state endeavouring to gain muscle on the international scene. Nevertheless, North Korean efforts to develop nuclear weapons has presented Northeast Asia and the whole international community with a serious security challenge. In 2003, it became the first country to pull out of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, posing the greatest threat to the treaty since it was signed in 1968 and creating fears that other countries would follow suit. North Korean actions have also destabilized the balance of power in the region, with Japan, who is now contemplated becoming a nuclear power, being watched anxiously by China, a nuclear heavyweight, who also has a treaty of friendship with North Korea, signed in 1961, which includes a commitment to defend it if it is attacked. Diplomacy and limited engagement with North Korea to date have proved unsuccessful. Alternative policy options touted are isolation, containment, or a military strike. However, the possible consequent collapse of North Korea and the inevitable outflow of millions of refugees would only further destabilize the entire region. Today's program will view the issue in the context of state rights to nuclear power.
Thank you, Dr. Kaleo. After that short introduction, I will now begin by asking the students to present their view on this controversial subject. Sasha, would you like to start?
Thank you. In general, my position states that having North Korea develop nuclear weapons and show the world that it really has them was an issue one could expect to arise from the current situation in the international relations. So what is necessary to do is not just blame North Korea, but see what is wrong with the current situation in the world. I mean, I'm not saying what North Korea did was right. What I'm saying is that one can speak about a country keeping to non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction if, and only if, there are no threats for that country and for its government. The situation in the world, created mainly by the United States, has made North Korea perform such a step. There is a good saying, if a rat is driven into a corner, it turns around and attacks, because basically it has nothing else to do. With the economical embargo from the US and with Iraqi being an illustrative example of what might happen to a country which does not want to have any means of defense, and North Korea naturally wants to throw all these burdens and threats off. Of course, North Korea has its own intentions, and they are coming only from within the country and cannot be explained by looking at the international arena. One could say that North Korea itself has all the times cancelled the non-proliferation agreements despite of the economical aid that has been given to it and insisted on more contributions, but the path of blackmailing and threatening has been chosen because it was the last chance of a small country to defend its interests. Today, in the world where all the voices heard are mainly those of the economical and political giants and the smaller states just supporting them, it is very strange and on the other hand very interesting to observe a phenomenon when a small and oppressed country can produce so much noise. But in my point of view, actions of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea should be perceived as means of self-defense and an attempt to throw off the economical restrictions put forward by the United States.
Thank you, Sasha. Kurt, would you like to present your case now?
Yes, of course. My argument is absolutely against the ongoing nuclear weapons production by North Korea. Practically, the reasons why North Korea should possess no nuclear arsenals are threefold. First of all, the quest of North Korea to enhance its nuclear capabilities can lead to a war on a regional level. One must note that the government at Pyongyang had already contributed to the failed invasion of South Korea from 1950 to 1953. This conflict has been considered by historians as the most devastating military confrontation worldwide after the end of the Second World War in 1945. This thus means that neither the intervention of the Americans in Vietnam nor the Soviet entry in Afghanistan reached an amount of bloodshed comparable to this Korean tragedy. The absolute lack of hesitation by North Korea to attack its counterpart 54 years ago still puts in danger the territorial compromise in existence today. With hindsight, one can argue that history tends to repeat itself very often. It is also important to note that there has been extensive range of North Korean provocations towards the neighboring democratic countries during the last 13 years. The commencement of uranium enrichment in the year 2002 outwardly breached the 1994 agreed framework signed with Japan and also the United States, despite the fact that the latter honored their commitments to aid North Korea with subsidized petroleum supplies. In 2003, North Korea even took steps to eject a whole team of Russian inspectors working for the International Atomic Energy Agency. The mandate for carrying out the inspections of nuclear energy facilities was issued by the Security Council itself. The second point is that discord in the Korean Peninsula can inevitably spark off instability in the world markets. During the crisis, the price of petroleum rose to $60 per barrel and the price of gold was inflated by 1%. The third reason is that nuclear production by North Korea is deviating attention from the Iranian issue. The Middle East is also a hotspot of fratricidal competition as much as the Korean lands are.
Thank you, Kurt. Kurt has focused primarily on the international implications, and I will now be passing to Anastasia, who will be focusing on domestic as well as international implications.
Thank you, Matthew. My position about North Korea having nuclear weapons and deciding to demonstrate it and show everyone that it can be used is complicated. First of all, it shows the existence of big domestic problems in the border of the country. At the same time, we show the problems of the country on the international arena, that North Korea, as an actor of international relations, is on the deadlock. And it seems to the country that only one possible way to solve this problem is to show itself on the international arena like a country which has power, that the state has nuclear weapons and can use it in any time. I think it is not a bad try to demonstrate itself, to show its power and strength. Because even with a free eye you can see that even with nuclear weapons near such countries, there are neighbors like Russia and China, and for them North Korea is not really dangerous. At the same time, all the sanctions from the actors of international relations are going to be used to take off the nuclear weapons from the hands of North Korea. But North Korea has been good in the case that it has taken away the USA coming inside the borders of the country. From the side of North Korea, it was a strong, purposeful step to demonstrate their nuclear weapons and that they can be used. North Korea has shown its power on the international arena. But on the other hand, it was not a good idea because North Korea didn't think about the sanctions which could be implemented on the country for the lowering its heat and for putting it in a more safe place on the international arena.
Thank you, Anastasia. We will now have a short break, after which we will have an intervention by Kyoko, who's from Japan. Hi, and welcome back to the second part of It's Debatable. Today we are discussing the nuclear crisis in North Korea. We have with us Kyoko, a second-year international relations student. Kyoko will be giving a Japanese perspective on the issue. It has often been said that North Korea is a threat to democracy in the region. How does it feel that North Korea retains nuclear weapons and democratic Japan doesn't?
Well, thank you, Matthew. I think Japan has no intention of becoming a nuclear weapon state, despite North Korea's successful nuclear test and the indications that it may test again. Japanese Foreign Minister Taro Aso said Japan has no position at all to consider going nuclear and would continue to rely on a half-century-old defense treaty that covers Japan with the U.S. nuclear umbrella. Japan, which has an advanced civilian nuclear program, could build a nuclear weapon quickly if it chose to do so. But public sentiments in the only nation to have been struck by nuclear bombs by the United States during World War II remain strongly opposed to developing an atomic arsenal.
So it seems that Japanese are heavily concerned with the theme of national security. Do you agree with the statement?
Such threats have reinforced a growing sense of vulnerability in Japan. This has been a great concern for the Japanese people, and this has contributed to the change in Japanese consciousness of the need to defend their own nation. However, I'm not sure if the U.S. and Japanese forces can really defend us properly. In the eyes of most Japanese, the more pressure you put on Kim Jong-il, the more determined he is to show he will stand up to U.S. imperialism. North Korea remains a long-term military threat, so Japan's military planners are pushing to increase defense spending, especially on new, more effective technology. Since they have long-range missiles that can reach Japan, we have to speed up to have our own system which can cope with such threats from North Korea. Japan's defense agency also wants close to $1 billion to buy a helicopter carrier ship, which would be Asia's biggest military vessel. That means more yen to defend the homeland in case a neighbor's threats turn real.
Okay, thank you, Kyoko. We can now return to our participants. Sasha, we'll start with you. Sasha, is the North Korean issue just a one-country crisis? Or does it show a failure in the current system of multipolar international relations?
Well, there are obviously different possible answers to this question. The issue is either a one-country crisis or a failure of all the system. Or maybe it is a case study which can be applied only to the current state. But with the situation developing due to the recent events in the world, such as the Iraqi invasion and the Iran non-proliferation talks. In my point of view, the situation with North Korea anyway is a case study, meaning that if not the government of the country or the historical situation around the state itself, no problem would have risen in the first place. But on the other hand, it was a force from within Korea's borders that pushed the country towards the creation of nuclear weapons and blackmailing.
I think that such a sensitive issue is not a one-country crisis, yet it does not reflect a complete failure in the way world politics are being conducted. It is true that nuclear proliferation, however, has deteriorated the strength of international law. However, the unanimous response of the 5 veto-holding Security Council members is quite impressive. Resolution 1718 imposed renewed sanctions on North Korea, and the Chinese made a radical U-turn in their traditional attitudes of patronage. This is to be considered a crucial development in current relations around the Korean Peninsula.
Sasha, are the North Korean weapons a tool by which to attempt the reunification of the peninsula, or are they a means by which to protect the Song dynasty against any American intention of regime change?
Well, first of all, the actions of North Korea are certainly aimed at protecting from the American intervention, as it was expressed by the officials of North Korea itself when they were asking for the signing of the non-aggression treaty and the wearing off of the economical embargo from the United States. It is yet too early, in my point of view, to speak about the reunification of the peninsula, as nowadays North Korea has much more significant problems with the accusations from the international community. Moreover, until now, North Korea had not in any way whatsoever stated or hinted that its goal is the reunification of the Korean Peninsula.
My perspective is that the nuclear bombs of North Korea are there absolutely to ward off American plans for regime change. Such plans of regime change were activated, for example, in Afghanistan in 2001 against the Taliban rule, and in Iraq in 2003 against the dictator Saddam Hussein. One must give consideration also to the North Korean claim in the year 2003, in which the country stated that it was ready to limit its nuclear arms program if the United States signed a treaty of non-aggression.
The Song dynasty doesn't like invitation from the USA or any other actors on the international relations. Just such an invitation could lead to their fear economic, political or social change in the country itself, and in the end may lead to the overthrow of the leaders of government and the existing regime, as happened in Iraq in the case of Saddam Hussein.
Kurt, do you think that this move by North Korea of demonstrating to every nation that it possesses nuclear weapons is a good way to make the country's voice heard, or will the sanctions put forward by the international community overshadow this?
The United Nations Security Council sanctions made North Korea agree to return to the six-party talks on 31st October 2006. The economic self-sufficiency present in the former Soviet Union cannot be found in North Korea. The country is heavily dependent on Chinese imports for most of its basic necessities, and the halting of Chinese cash grants was a big blow to Pyongyang. One must also note that the 2006 North Korean nuclear crisis came at a wrong moment in history when considering the takeover of the South Korean diplomat Ban Ki-moon as the new UN Secretary General, replacing Kofi Annan. Placing the issue of North Korea higher on Security Council priorities can be harmful in the current circumstances of having a Republican government ruling the American superpower. It is by now known that the Republican administration in the United States is more realistic in its foreign policy approach, and it is more susceptible of using military coercion rather than sit down and talk calmly about the issue.
As for me, I think that the final result at the end depends on the decisions made by the international community, by the countries participating in the six-party talks. On the one hand, it is necessary for these countries not to let the situation become out of control, and on the other hand, they cannot show themselves too tractable, as then this method of blackmailing will be used by other countries to get self-profit from the predominant forces of today's world. So I think that unless North Korea performs a really good political move and makes the issue even harder to solve for the other countries, it will be a situation where at the end North Korea will be given a piece of the pie, like some benefits, but then the issue will be tackled once and for all.
On the one hand, North Korea wants to show it has sovereign rights as an independent state. North Korea claims nuclear weapons are not going to be used, but also states that the country can fight for its own interests. But on the other hand, all actors of international relations, to my mind, will impose all possible sanctions because of the North Korea nuclear stand.
Thank you. We can now ask the final question. Sasha, will North Korean policy eventually bring out a costly regional arms race?
It is not that important, because the army of North Korea, even without the nuclear weapons, doubles that of the South Korea, at least it was like this in the last years, and other countries in the region, such as China, Japan or Russia, are so big and powerful that North Korea cannot be a big menace for them, so there is no need of an arms race. So in the region, the nuclear program would rather be understood as actions to dictate certain things to the USA than an attempt to threaten North Korea's neighbors. So I think that Korea's actions would rather bring about a race in defense than an arms race.
I think that the prospect of having a regional arms race heavily depends on the North Korean efforts to speed up understanding and rapprochement with South Korea. The refusal of North Korea to accept the notion of coexistence with the South will surely urge Seoul to build up its own nuclear stockpile, and this could happen with relative ease due to the close relation of South Korea with the number one nuclear force in the world, that is the United States.
Surely a big part of population in North Korea, almost half of it, is engaged with the military. The army in North Korea is very well developed and equipped. It has good technical support and, of course, the claim to have nuclear weapons. All of this can place this country on the level of any other countries that can fight and pose threats to the international arena. However, in comparison to countries like USA, Russia, China and Japan, North Korea is not a real danger. So I think the policy of North Korea will not really bring a costly regional arms race.
That was Anastasia Kletskaya. I would also like to thank today's other participants, Sasha Onokov, Kurt Mifsud, and Kyoko Gio. To our listeners, I hope you liked today's program, and thank you for listening. I am Matthew Caruana Galizia. Please join me for the next edition of It's Debatable, which will be aired next week.